Setlist, the music business podcast from CMU. This week, MPs want to see action on musicians' income. Welcome to Setlist, the music business podcast from CMU. I'm Andy Malt. With me is Chris Cook. Hello, Chris.
Hello there.
On this week's show, the warning from UK politicians that there need to be tangible steps to improve musicians' remuneration and performer rights in the next year, and Blur drummer Dave Rowntree's class action lawsuit over songwriter royalties. But first, Chris, why don't you tell us where you are this week?
I am in Portugal, in a hotel room. It's quite a big, echoey hotel room, so you'll probably be able to tell that in the quality of the audio, depending on Andy Malt's production skills back at base. But this is quite a big hotel room. Has a very nice view, but I've shut the curtains so we get slightly better acoustics. So I'm not currently taking in the magnificent view. So I hope people appreciate my view-lacking commitment in order to get slightly better audio on this podcast. So I am at an event called Westway Lab. I've been here a couple of days. It's a really good event. On the Thursday, which was the real reason I was here, well, I say that's why I was invited with my journalist hat on to come and find out about the outputs of a project that's been going on for a couple of years, which I have actually spoken to some of the people involved in it before. It's called Musica Perifica. And basically, it's a project that's been doing two things. First of all, it has been documenting the creative process of a number of musicians who make more traditional, non-commercial folk music in various different places around the continent of Europe. So they've been filming the creative process, and there is a documentary coming out the other side. But it's not just about that. The other side of the project is then looking at the rights and the data around the music that's being performed and recorded and put into this documentary, because these are musical scenes where maybe focus on things like rights and splits and collective licensing and data is not a particular priority of the creators, but of course it should be. So two sides to that project: following the creative process, but then looking at how the rights and the data works and how the industry can put better systems in place so that not just the artists who are signed to labels and publishers and have management, I mean, half the time their data's not up to much, but anybody making music in all the different scenes, we have a system in place to make sure the rights and the data are captured. So I got an update on all of that. That was on the Thursday. And then the other cool thing that happens at this event, and I don't think I've been to an event where this happens before, a week before all the industry people arrive, they have 9 artists from all over the world come together, and they basically partner them up into, so that'll be 3 groups of 2 and then 1 group of 3. And they then have a week to come up with about 30 minutes of new music, which they then perform as part of the festival. So that's a cool idea, isn't it? More festivals should be doing that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I haven't heard any of their music, so.
Well, I have, because I went to watch some of them perform last night. And the other cool thing is yesterday we had a little session where delegates at the conference sat down with the artists and they talked about the whole thing. And a lot of people, they are sort of matched that they're coming from very different musical traditions. So there was one who's sort of like an electronic music producer who was working with this more sort of punk rock duo on some stuff. And then you've got some people who are much more like, I don't know, avant-garde electronica stuff and more folk stuff and classical stuff. Very interesting project, listening about their creative process. And I managed, and I think I should get a prize for this, at the end of this conversation where they all had this really interesting, fascinating conversation about the creative process they've been through and the music they had created, I resisted the really big temptation, especially given what I've been hearing about the previous day with the Musica Perifica project. I resisted the temptation to ask them all at the end of all of that whether or not they'd agreed their splits and documented the rights ownership in the music that they had created. I didn't spoil the conversation with that question, although I do wonder whether or not they have agreed their splits. Maybe I'm here till tomorrow. Maybe I'll try and track them down. with a split sheet and a copy of Music Copyright Explained. And said, did you sort out the data in the admin? But anyway, a great event. It finishes tomorrow. So by the time you listen to this podcast, it's over for this year. But if you get an opportunity to come to Westway Lab next year or in a future year, or if you're an artist and you're interested in that residency program, go and check out their website. I'm sure Andy Malt will put a link in the show notes to where you can find out more. But as much as I would like it to become this, Setlist is not just a podcast where Chris gets to talk about his travels and adventures. We're here to talk about music business stuff.
Yeah, I don't want to talk about that any more than I have to. It sounds like you're having a lovely time.
That's
good for you, isn't it?
It is.
Nice.
It is very good.
Anyway, of course, we need to discuss this week's most interesting music industry news stories, including the boost to German music revenues that collecting society Gamer says is no thanks at all to streaming. But first, MPs on the UK Parliament's Culture, Media and Sport Select Committee published a new report this week in which they said they expect to see tangible steps to improve musicians' remuneration and performer rights in the next 12 months. This comes ahead of the first meeting next week of a working group of music industry stakeholders that will discuss creator remuneration in streaming. The report actually looks at creator remuneration across all of the creative industries, with MPs warning that many creators are struggling to make a living, even if they are successfully engaging with audiences. And there are a variety of reasons for this, including short-term projects, uncertain funding, and technological disruption. The outcome is that many creators now have to work other jobs, rely on family support, or leave the industry altogether. It's pretty wide-ranging in its remit, and it looks, among other things, at challenges facing freelance workers, the lack of a private copy levy in the UK, and the ongoing debate around copyright obligations of AI companies. As well as all that, off the back of the committee's earlier inquiry into the economics of music streaming, it also looks at the specific issues faced by musicians and songwriters.
Yes, so long-time listeners to Setlist will remember the Culture Select Committee's Economics of Music Streaming Inquiry, because boy, did we talk about it a lot on this podcast. And the only place where that inquiry got more coverage than Setlist was in the CMU Daily. But on the back of that streaming inquiry a few years back, the UK government instigated a number of initiatives involving the music industry to try and address some of the issues that have been raised by the inquiry, and particularly by artists and songwriters and their managers during the inquiry. And so some of that work was focused on transparency issues, some of it on data issues. And as well as that, the Intellectual Property Office of the UK government commissioned a bunch of research which focused on the copyright law reforms that MPs had proposed at the end of their inquiry in their report. And those were copyright law reforms that would specifically change the way that artists and songwriters are remunerated when their music is streamed. And that research will now inform this new Creator Remuneration Working Group when it gets underway this coming week. Welcoming all of that work that has been done on data and transparency and all of that research work, the Culture Select Committee said in its new report this week that the government must now maintain this momentum, take stock of the results of the extensive research it has commissioned, and look at how it can drive fundamental reform of music streaming with a package of measures designed to make streaming work for all.
And that's where this new working group comes in. It was originally announced by the government last May and will see various industry representatives get together to debate the argument that artists and songwriters have not fully benefited from the streaming boom and the surging record industry revenues that it has generated. And there are obviously two sides to that debate. The record labels argue that artists command higher royalty rates today than in the past and can also opt to release music in partnership with distributors and get an even bigger share of streaming income. Meanwhile, the commercial challenges artists face are in part the result of the streaming market being so competitive, with unprecedented amounts of music being released and new music competing head-on with decades worth of catalogue. And on the other side, the music maker community doesn't deny any of that, but argues there is nevertheless a large group of artists whose music is doing well on streaming services, but who see a small share of the money generated because they're locked into old record deals that pay lower royalty rates, or they're session musicians who currently earn nothing from streaming. And the copyright reforms proposed by MPs would give those musicians extra rights to enable them to demand a bigger cut of the revenue that their tracks generate.
In addition to all of that, songwriters more specifically have also criticised the fact that of total streaming revenues, so the money that comes in through Spotify, Apple Music, etc., up to 55% of that money flows through to the record industry, through record labels and music distributors, while only 15% flows through on the song side, so music publishers and songwriters. That's basically because the starting point when digital music first came along in the early 2000s, or legitimate digital music first came along in the early 2000s, the starting point was the CD model, where generally a single figure percent of the money generated from a CD sale used to flow through to publishers and songwriters. And although it is true that since the early days of digital music, the music publishers and collecting societies that have negotiated deals with the digital platforms, they have been slowly pushing up the song share. So the share of the money that goes to the song on a stream is higher than on a physical disc. And actually in the UK, it's more than double what was paid through on a physical disc. But nevertheless, many songwriters argue that because streaming is so fundamentally different to selling a CD or a vinyl record, the cut going to songwriters and the song rights should still be significantly higher than it currently is. And that's actually something that the MPs specifically hone in on in their new report this week, saying that the current revenue split between recording and publishing rights doesn't reflect the importance of songwriters, composers, and publishers. And the MPs therefore recommended that the government should bring forward some plans to consult with, loads of people, with the music industry, with artists and songwriters, but also with music fans, which is interesting, to work out what the optimal rate should be on the publishing side. So if we've got 100% of revenue to split, what percentage should be going to the streaming service? What percentage should be going to the recording? Currently, the smallest percentage is allocated to the song. Should it be going up to 20 to 25%? So the MPs reckon the government needs to do some specific work on that question, which hasn't really been part of the IPO Commission research to date.
Responding to all of that, BPI CEO Joe Twist says that this report fails to recognise that with the support of their labels, more UK artists are succeeding in the streaming economy than ever before, and that the real challenge facing all of us is how we can enable continued growth so even more creators stand to benefit. The record labels also oppose any copyright reforms that have been proposed by MPs, and to that end, Twist warned that in an increasingly competitive global market, the committee's approach risks limiting investment and harming the UK talent of the future, when what we need is a supportive regulatory environment in which British recorded music can thrive. But then going back to the other side, the Council of Music Makers noted that it's now 3 years since the Economics of Streaming inquiry concluded and the Select Committee called for a complete reset of streaming. And they argued that it's now time for stakeholders from across the music industry to stop denying reality and to instead come to the table with solutions, whether that's the copyright reforms proposed by MPs or a negotiated agreement.
Yeah, I think it's certainly true to say that the government deciding to order the different debates as part of the economics of streaming work, doing data and transparency first, and then subsequently remuneration. The reason for that was because they commissioned all of that research, and the idea was we should have the research before we do the remuneration conversation. But I think there's two things there. Obviously, as you can tell from that statement from the Council of Music Makers, on the artist-songwriter side of all of this, while, you know, the data code, the transparency code that came out of the data working group and the transparency working group that the UK government convened, while those have been welcomed by the music maker community, albeit their statements have generally stressed that they see those codes as compromises, as a step in the right direction, rather than solving all of the data issues and transparency issues. But for the music maker community, remuneration is the really big issue. So they have definitely in their statements been expressing frustration that it's taken this long for the remuneration conversation to happen. And I think the other thing to say is, this is the fiery one. This is where certainly the record labels, certainly the major labels, I think, you know, actually with some of the independent labels, They are closer to what the music makers are asking. But certainly, if you take the current official position of the major record companies, there is going to be quite a considerable standoff, I think. Or maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm being pessimistic. Maybe a nice little agreement will be reached in the industry, whether that's a voluntary agreement or it's something that's put into copyright law. We will see after the first meeting of this remuneration working group later this week.
Coming up later, the lawsuit against PRS filed by Blur drummer Dave Rowntree. But before that, let's quickly look through some other stories from the music industry this week, starting with the Worldwide Independent Network. That is the organisation that represents the independent music community worldwide, as the name suggests. And it has this week updated its Global Independent Values. These were first published in 2012, and they are the 10 key principles shared by its international trade body members. They've been renewed following a period of consultation with music organisations globally.
Proving that the debate around creator remuneration is not just a UK thing, German collecting society GEMA has published a set of stats detailing song rights income in Germany in 2023. And while it was a financially successful year, the money flowing in from live music and the public performance of music looking really strong, GEMA was very keen to say, in its summary of these new figures, that digital growth was very disappointing in Germany last year on the song side of the business, particularly when compared with what was seen in terms of the revenue coming from streaming services on the recorded music side. So I guess GEMA saying something similar to what the MPs said in their report this week, which is maybe it's time to have a review of the split of streaming money between the recording rights and the song rights.
The Republican Senate Minority Leader in US Congress, Mitch McConnell, this week endorsed proposals to pass a law forcing Chinese tech company ByteDance to sell TikTok or see the app banned in the US. He stated that he would support common sense steps that would take one of Beijing's favourite tools of coercion and espionage off the table.
So bold speaking in the US Senate on the proposed TikTok ban this week, although TikTok will be pleased to know that an even more significant, important figure in American politics, that being Taylor Swift, of course, seems to have made up with TikTok, because despite the fact that she is signed to Universal Music, albeit with a distribution deal, but Universal release her music, and she's also published by Universal Music Publishing, but despite that, she circumvented Universal Music's big boycott of TikTok, and Taylor Swift's tracks have reappeared on the TikTok platform, probably because she's got a new album to promote, and Taylor Swift's team probably know how important TikTok is to promote a new album, even though her business partner, when it comes to recordings and publishing, is still involved in its big standoff with TikTok. But I guess now Taylor Swift is friends with TikTok again. That will make the Republicans in Congress even more keen to get the app banned within the USA.
Lastly, in this quickfire roundup, Spotify has launched a new AI chatbot that will build playlists for you, which, I don't know, that's probably fun for 10 minutes or so. If you want to try that out, it's currently available in beta to premium subscribers in the UK and Australia.
And if that doesn't sound like fun, maybe it doesn't to some of you, you could wait until the next Spotify innovation comes along, because there was a report in the Wall Street Journal this week that another new tool that Spotify is developing that will be available to premium subscribers is a tool that will allow you to mess with music that's on Spotify. You can speed it up, you can slow it down, you can remix it within the app. That's apparently what they're developing. They'll have to figure out how they're going to sort that out in terms of their licenses with the music industry. But of course, over on the social media platforms where licensing is sometimes, well, let's say there are some grey areas when it comes to how music is dealt with on the social media platforms, even the platforms that do have licensing deals with the music industry. We all know the TikTok generation loves speeding up or slowing down pop songs. So obviously Spotify are trying to capitalize on that and allow the music industry to earn extra royalties when sped up songs go viral, I guess. That's not yet available, but it may be sometime soon.
You can read more about all of these stories and everything discussed on this week's episode in the show notes, in your podcast player, or at completemusicupdate.com. And finally, on this edition of Setlist, something that actually happened while we were away on our little break last week. Did you all notice that there wasn't an episode last week? I hope so. Blur drummer Dave Rowntree has launched a class action lawsuit against PRS for Music, accusing the Collecting Society of breaching UK and EU competition rules in relation to unallocated royalties. He is requesting that all 160,000 writer members of the organisation be beneficiaries of the action. The musician, who is working with law firm Maitland Walker on this, claims in his recent legal filing that PRS misallocates black box income. These are royalty payments that have been received by the society, but usually due to a lack of data, it doesn't know which members to pass the money on to. And the lawsuit claims that PRS handles this income in a way that benefits music publishers more than songwriters. PRS denied those allegations in its response to the filing, which was submitted to the Competition Appeal Tribunal last week.
So this seems like the perfect moment to just dedicate a few minutes of Setlist to yet another explanation of collective licensing here in the UK. So basically, when music is broadcast or performed in the UK, royalties are due to songwriters and publishers, and those royalties are collected and managed and administrated on behalf of the music industry by PRS, the Performing Rights Society. So PRS gets the money in from the radio stations and the TV channels and from venues and festivals, etc., etc., and then has to pass that money on to its members, to both writers and publishers. And in theory, it does that based on what music has been used. So it will get a report from a radio station or a TV channel saying, this is the music we used, here's the money we owe you. And then PRS's job is to then figure out which writers and which publishers get paid. And the way it works in the UK is, even when a writer is published, so they are working with a music publisher, PRS still pays a chunk of the money directly to the songwriter, and we call that the writer's share of PRS income. It's usually at least 50% of the money, and then if they are a published writer, the other 50% will be paid through to the publisher. We call that the publisher's share. If the writer's unpublished, they get 100% of the money, but that's sort of how the system is set up in the UK. But of course, one of the challenges with collective licensing is that sometimes a collecting society doesn't actually know what music has been used by some of its licensees. So cafes and bars, we're not necessarily tracking what music is being used. Some of the sort of smaller online radio stations, we may not be. There are actually some scenarios, for example, in streaming, when we do actually know what music has been used, but for technical reasons we won't go into today, there are these scenarios where the society has a chunk of money, but it doesn't actually know what songs it's due to, and therefore it doesn't know who it needs to pay. And that money, unallocated to specific works, that is what in the music industry we generally refer to as the black box. We should stress, PRS itself does not call it the black box. Generally, collecting societies don't like it when people like us talk about the black box. I don't know what they call it. The very dark grey box or something? I don't know. Anyway. Everyone in the industry calls it the black box. And it's that money that this legal action is about. How does a collecting society distribute money if it doesn't know what songs have been used and therefore which writers and publishers to pay? So each society has to have a set of rules that set out what it does with that money. And a very common way of doing it is basically to distribute the money based on market share. So if you got X percent of the money where we do know what music was used, you then get X percent of the money where we don't know what was used. But these distribution rules are controversial with every collecting society. Sometimes there are allegations that there isn't any transparency about how the money is shared out. And obviously what this new lawsuit is saying is that the rules are favoring the publisher members to the detriment of the writer members. Although the lawsuit does also say that because of a lack of transparency, it's not exactly clear how this money is being shared out, but nevertheless, they're pretty confident on this allegation that it is detrimental to the songwriter members.
As I said, following the filing of that lawsuit, PRS issued a statement denying the allegations against it. It wrote to its members assuring them that the claim holds no water, saying that the allegations are factually incorrect and fundamentally misrepresent our policies and operations. It says that the legal claim is based on a misinterpretation of PRS governance and operational practices, and that the organisation provides far greater transparency than other collecting societies.
You mentioned that if this class action is successful, it could basically benefit all of the writer members of PRS, so specifically all of the 160,000 writers who've been members of PRS since March 2017. That said, writers who are members of PRS, they don't have to be part of this class action. There is the option to opt out, but all of those who remain opt in, if it is successful and there is some sort of payout. Now, quite how that would work, I'm assuming that they would have to claw some money back from the publisher members and pay it to the writers, or, you know, change the way they distribute the money in the future. I don't know. But the idea is that if this action is successful, that all of the writer members of PRS who do not opt out would benefit in some way. So now that this action is underway, it will be very interesting to see how it progresses. I suspect we'll be coming back to this at some point on a future edition of Setlist.
But that's all we've got time for on this week's show. We'll be back with another episode next week, and you can keep up with all the latest music industry news every day at completemusicupdate.com.